Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Janet Stevens, the Chief Information Officer of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. Janet, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So this is exciting. I think this is my first Ask the CIO with the folks from FSIS. I've done several of your colleagues across USDA, so it's nice to catch up with you. Let's just start with some basics. The mission of the Food Safety and Inspection Service, tell us a little bit about it.
FSIS is the public health agency in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we're responsible for ensuring that the nation's commercial supply of meat, poultry, egg products, and now siluriformis fish, you know it as catfish, they're safe, they're wholesome, and they're correctly labeled and packaged. We're out every single day. Our inspection personnel inspect each and every livestock and poultry carcass before it enters commerce. We have inspectors that inspect every processing plant at least once per shift. And so that ensures that no meat or poultry product intended for food can come into commerce. We also apply our mark of inspection, so you know that it's safe and wholesome. It's a kind of a circle on there, and it says USDA, and it's got an establishment number, so you know it's been approved by us. We also take action if things are misbranded or they're adulterated. And we employ about 9,000 employees and about 8,000 out in the field.
So 8,000 in the field. I know we'll get to that. That probably gives you as the CIO a ton of extra complexities, if we'll call that, since a lot of their work, I'm sure, is mobile. But let's just talk about your work as the CIO, supporting the mission as a CIO, really, of a public health agency.
Well, as you can imagine, having that many folks out in the field and processing so many things, we have three laboratories. There's 127 ports of entry that we are there, and we also regulate 150,000 in-commerce facilities. So the way we work, and to your point earlier, we are a mobile agency, but we're also not. We're in a lot of areas that are very remote. We're also in areas like in big cities, believe it or not, and those areas can be really heavily congested with, for example, mobile traffic. Everybody's got their device, so we're competing for that same traffic. So one of the things that I look to do is just make sure that our folks have what they need to do their job on a daily basis. But we don't work in USDA space per se. That's a big thing that folks don't know about us. Our folks are in those plants every single day. They're on the line, and they don't spend a lot of time in front of their computers. So we have to make sure that we accommodate for that in our technological provisions.
And from your perspective as the CIO, do you spend most of your time in the field then? Are you working with the field folks, or is your staff maybe working with the field folks to say, what do they need and how can we meet their needs? I've seen that from a lot of CIOs who become a lot more customer-focused, customer-centric over the last, I'd say, probably 18 months, 2 years.
Absolutely. I spend as much time as I can in the field. I've visited all of our district offices, all of our labs. I've visited many, many plants, because if you don't go on site, I mean, you can hear it. It gets a filter in D.C., and a lot of times you want to make sure that you're hearing what they really, really need to do their job, and it's not filtered. And I don't mean that in a negative context, but it's just as things go through, things change. So going out, and I've watched many times, you know, the live livestock come in, livestock go through the process, slaughter, all that, walk the floor with the employees, go and sit, show me your office, show me how you boot up your computer, show me how you use your phone. How much time do you spend in front of your computer? How much time do you have to spend per day? A lot of folks work a lot of overtime, for example. They are on the floor most of the time and not at their desk, but observing it, understanding how much time they have to do their job helps me to come back and talk about what technologies can I provide you? How can we enhance our application so maybe things are faster? Or maybe instead of three screens, that moves down to one screen. And it really, really helps to talk to the employees, both at the management level and at the working level.
Looking a little bit at your background, and we'll get to that in a second, it would seem to me you're probably a very strategic CIO versus maybe a very operational CIO. There's a lot of CIOs who come up through the ranks who were coders at one point, or were, you know, working on mainframe computers back in the 70s, though you're not that old.
I'll guess. I'll make a Vax Fortran joke at some point, but I have done Vax Fortran.
Very cool. Is that how you see yourself, as more of a strategic than operational side, just based on what you said, you know, to walk in the floor, talking to them, understanding their needs?
Absolutely. My background is English and communications, and it always surprises people. And I will just be perfectly honest. Coming up the ranks, what I did was complain about IT. IT is not working for me, whether I was in web, whether I was in publishing, no matter where I was. I think this can be better. Well, you know how it is. If you complain enough, someone says, well, go make it better if you think it's so easy. So I really had this, and I think we've touched on this in earlier discussions, is security. I mean, nobody wants to love security. I certainly did not. They're the no people, and they don't think strategically, and they're always trying to keep us from doing what we need to do. I came in as a strategic CIO, and I still feel very strongly that's my strong suit. I had to really learn the operations side and learn to understand how to balance that, because it really was not bringing the IT folks in at the beginning. And then, of course, when you get to the end, things are going to get held up. So I really had to learn how to work with the operational folks and, you know, gain their trust to know that what I was going to do was to support them, but we also had to support the mission of the agency. And I think that's where I see myself.
So let's talk about your background, since you told us a little bit about it. Interesting. You complained about IT, and now you're in charge of IT. The irony there is thick. How did you end up as the CIO if you started really as an English major?
So coming out of college, passed up stockbroker, because that seemed like a little bit much for the 90s. I went into the Economic Research Service, which was part of USDA. So my family, my father worked in state government. And so it was like, okay, I get this. I came in as a writer-editor. I worked there for almost 8 years. But that's when the web was really coming up. And our website, the navigation, you'll appreciate this, was a pyramid. Was not designed by communications-minded folks and didn't have a search engine. And it was really designed by technical people, because that's really who was doing the web back then. So coming in and talking about how we can improve the user experience, they didn't understand how that worked. Looking at, where's your eye going to go? Where are you going to click? If you're searching for this, where are you going to go? That's kind of where I was trying to apply that into the web. So I redesigned the websites there, led me to the risk management agency. So I worked there, came out of there at the last 6 months as their public affairs director, believe it or not. So I got a little bit back into the field there. Came here to FSIS to do the web as a public affairs, as the web services director. And like I said, we were doing projects, we were doing, you know, lots of work together, and it was driving me crazy. Why couldn't we get things out on time, on budget? And everybody was kind of on the same page. So applied and got it, and learned a lot ever since, and have a great deal of respect for the folks who had to put up with me to come in and realize that we were all really on the same page. We just had to talk to each other differently.
In many ways, what you hear about CIOs in the last maybe 3, 4, 5 years is they don't need that technology side. They have contractors, they have people to do that. And while they need to understand it, the people side, the soft skills, if you will, are more important, because you have to be able to explain to management, to other CXO level, why this project, this program needs IT and why the IT is important, not just because, well, it's IT and we all need to use it now. Do you look at your background and go, that's where your strength is coming from?
Oh, absolutely. Is the soft skills are a key part of it, because I shouldn't be talking all the time. Our folks are great folks, helping them to go out and give them opportunities to learn more about the business, sending them on ride-alongs with Investigator, sending them to plants to let them understand how the slaughter process works, sending them to meetings so they understand that, but also understanding when you come back, you have to explain that information and translate that into very human-focused, human factors ways, so that it can be used properly. People can be satisfied with what they're doing. So I do think that's a challenge. So I think I've learned from them and they've learned from me, and that's been a really great positive experience.
Now here's the big question. Are you the help desk at home for your family? Do you get calls? Well, you are a CIO. My computer's not working. What do I do? Do you get those calls?
I will start off by saying how much I love my family, particularly my parents. They're in their 80s, and I thought it'd be a great idea to give them an iPad. It seems so simple to use. They did have a regular computer before, and I would go home once a month and fall asleep next to it as I did my software updates for them, because it didn't make any sense. So the iPad was a great transition, but they still are getting used to. I don't know where the internet is, so I do have to get phone calls. I think late last week I got one from my dad. He said, I can't find the internet. It's gone. So like most of us, we are definitely there to be the tech support for our families.
Fair enough. You never thought that you'd be that tech support. You'd be the editing support, but now you're both.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about your office a little bit. When I said you got to have the good people. So how many federal employees do you have? How many contractors do you have? What's your IT budget for 2016?
We have just over 80 feds on staff. Contractors do vary, because it depends on if we're doing a lot of development work or some other work that we need them for. So roughly, usually less than 100 we have at any given time. My planned IT spend for 2016 is around $97 million.
When you look at the 80 feds to roughly about 100 contractors, that's a pretty good ratio. Is that where you want it to be? Do you expect more feds over time, or do you expect more contractors? Again, I know it depends on the project and the program and the time of the year, but generally speaking.
One thing we're looking at right now is making the transition to DevOps. So I don't know exactly what that mix is going to look like yet, but we're really looking at what should we... I think I've reorged 3 times since I've been here, and you do kind of have to keep doing that. You shouldn't stay still. So our next reorg opportunity will be should we do DevOps? Should we flatten the organization? How do you move folks around? How do you train them and give them the opportunity to be prepared for those types of things? So that's really what's going to help drive that next generation of our team, is really how we're going to implement DevOps here.
All right, you gave us a little bit of a heads up on a priority. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about those priorities. My guest is Janet Stevens, the Chief Information Officer of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Janet Stevens, the Chief Information Officer of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. Now, Janet, before a break, we talked a little bit about the mission of the FSIS, your role as CIO, the makeup of your office, your background a little. Then you gave us just a little bit of a heads up of a priority, transition to DevOps. It's a big training I'm seeing across government. So let's start there as a priority, and then you can go into maybe what other priorities are you working on over the next 6 or 9 months.
One of the things I think we all struggle with in IT is it's not really a development methodology so much as how do we work better with the business. And so you look at things like enterprise architecture, you look at things like communications and team building, but really one of the things we're looking at is how to blend all of that together holistically. And DevOps, we feel, at least for the time being, is one of those areas we want to transition to improve software delivery, the time frame, the time to market for that, to improve the team building between the staffs, and to ultimately improve the customer satisfaction and ability to deliver the mission efficiently and effectively. One key thing that we're trying to work with the agency on is you look at IT and you can sometimes put it in a bucket as IT is a thing, you can pick up a thing and plug a hole with it, or there's an IT tool that you just plug and play and life makes it better. So if you do waterfall bad, agile good, and you know, it's what's best for what you're trying to accomplish. And also the big challenge we want to work on is it's a culture shift to do DevOps. It's not something the IT department or an OCIO shop does in a vacuum. This touches every particular part of what your agency does. It is a culture shift. And, you know, you can look online. Gartner has some great statistics about the successes of being bimodal or transitioning to DevOps. And you see that, you know, 50 to 90% of the time it fails. But the reason it fails is because it's not treated as a culture change. It's treated more as a change in development methodology. So we want to be very specific and plan out for a longer transition period. We want to get some pilots behind us, but we want to make sure that we coach the organization along the way. You can't just kind of drop off the requirements and check the box and say that they're there and walk off. We want to bring everybody in rooms together and get them to talk and talk about what if this doesn't go this way, how else could it be done? But think about it with the business together. It's not about a piece of paper. It's about automating processes that will make everybody's job either better or at least reflect the reality of the job. Our folks are in the field. If we don't hear from them and they are not participating every step of the way, we're not going to be able to deliver the best products and tools for them. So that's really our huge focus coming up for 17 is what's our first toe dip into DevOps and how to make it, I mean, and to accept failure. In IT, it is very, very hard to look at failure as something that is not necessarily or innately bad. You look at science, failure's there throughout science. I mean, you fail until you succeed. That's not the way folks, you know, view a lot of things, and it's a specific challenge in the government because a lot of what your failures become can become very public. So we want to make sure that, like I said, we institutionalize this, but we just work with the business and look at it as a culture change, and we support each other every step of the way.
So I know there's more, but let's continue going down this path of DevOps. You talk about pilots, you talk about culture transition. What are some of the things you're doing to get to that point of, okay, now we can take this on as a pilot? Or what do we need to do first to get that culture change going? Is it a matter of some training? Is it a matter of just bringing people together to talk a lot about what this means for the organization? Give me a sense.
One of the things we've done in the last few months is we hired a new chief technology officer, and he has experience in DevOps. So the one thing we didn't want to do is try to learn about it and then try to apply it. We really wanted to have someone who lived through it, who could give us a lot of leadership in that area. So we're very fortunate to have that person on board. It's exciting the staff. I mean, to have someone come up and show you how you can watch something stand up, break down, push something out, and by the time he finishes having a conversation, you're watching in the background something pushed to production. All of your testing is done. You've got the documentation you need. You're not chasing around signatures. So that was really something important for us, is to have someone with experience to lead us in that. But we will have to do testing. We're looking pilots. We thought some opportunities for pilots could be just small maintenance releases. Why not? Don't bite off a whole new piece of enhancement if you can't do something as small as a maintenance release in, you know, a more agile way. Then you need to rethink how you're going to do your DevOps plan. So it's basically having someone experienced, training and patience and acceptance that things are going to fail sometimes, but they're going to fail small so that we can succeed largely.
A lot of times you hear about DevOps and you hear user experience or user groups or some creation of, okay, how do we get the people who are going to use this technology day in and day out to give us the requirements? So how are they going to set the requirements? Have you already or plan to develop, kind of create that users group to really tell you or give you some insights in terms of what they need, how they need it, and lay out kind of, okay, point A, point B, point C, and going forward?
We're a regulatory agency, first and foremost. So we do have a lot of things, luckily, that are in policy. But policy gives you that framework. You build business processes against that. But the key thing we all have to learn together is, in the field, things can change. And you have to make sure that you ask, how else could this be done? And you have to bring people together to talk about it, all the touch points, not in a stovepipe of, we'll talk to this field employee, we'll talk to this investigator, we'll talk to this policy person. It's really bringing people together, talk about it holistically. So we're really looking at it from a process perspective, but also looking at how else could it be done, so we don't get stuck with an unplanned event that we could have planned for if we just asked them the right questions. But it really is bringing them all together. And even in the field, you can just have a phone line, you can have a live meeting, you can bring folks together. But we need to make sure that people, we can bridge the geography, and that's the challenge.
From a time frame perspective, what's the next step? Where you brought someone in, the CTO, who has experience in it. I imagine they've begun talking about it and showing and diagramming on whiteboards or whatever. What's the timeline for you to get that first pilot maybe out of the gate?
We're looking to get our first pilot done this calendar year.
And you haven't chosen which one yet, I imagine. It's still kind of in the works.
It's still very much in its infancy. And like I said, we're first bringing him on board and orient him to, and he's actually been traveling, which is great, meeting the folks on the line, meeting the folks out at the laboratory. So he first wanted to go around, and he's met with every single executive here. What are your pain points in IT? So we wanted to give him that opportunity to familiarize himself before he came in with the guy with the plan, and then everybody thinks, oh, you're such a smart person. We used to have a term of propeller head for one of our other folks, and so you don't want to come in as being the person who doesn't know the problems but it's going to solve them all. So we wanted to give him the opportunity and his staff the opportunity to understand the organization. So it's still in its infancy, but we think that this calendar year will make our first steps, and by next year we'll be really starting to institutionalize these things and learn our lessons and improve.
And when it comes to DevOps, there are certain agencies, whether it's the USPTO or Citizenship and Immigration Service over at DHS. You could look at several others, FBI is another one, who have had experience and success with Agile DevOps. Are you also reaching out, or maybe some people obviously in USDA as well, are you reaching out to those just to kind of, what best practices can you share? What guides can I steal from you? Can you have one of your folks come and talk to us? Have you started to do that yet, or is that maybe something down the road?
Yes and yes. Our CTO actually came from DHS, so he's bringing his experience from there, and we've actually had folks already come out to one of our all-hands meetings. Our staff really didn't understand what that was. It's a very different, but it was a great energetic discussion. Everybody was very, I've never seen my staff so engaged in a discussion before in my life, and it was really, really exciting to see that, hey, this is something we're going to do as a team, and we're going to support the mission, but other people have done it. And we're going to learn our lessons from them, and we're going to have that experience, and we're going to have the support all the way up the chain to do this. But it was quite an experience, but you're absolutely right. We want to make sure that we don't do those missteps that we can avoid.
All right, DevOps, one big priority. Let's talk about some of the other ones.
Oh, Fatara. We have to talk about Fatara, right? So we're very heavily focused in Fatara. The department has a Chief Information Officers Council that I belong to, and that's been a great experience over the years to participate in. I've been at the department 25 years, been a CIO now for, I believe, this is year 9. So seeing that come together has been great, and we've all been given different pieces and parts to play. So I've been helping out with the on the Fatara side. I'm on the team, but the main focus from that has been the self-assessments. So working with senior leadership to go through 106 self-assessment questions was such a delight, I have to tell you. But it really gave us the opportunity to talk individually and collectively about our IT portfolio and really what are we doing in it in more non-technical terms. But we've got the audits coming up in April, so we're making sure that as an agency and a department, our governance process, the department's governance process, and everything that's coming up, that we're doing it together. And I think that's been a great bridge. Fatara's gotten a little bit of an interesting label. But for us, it's really been something we just plugged into our agency's enterprise governance process. And it's enabled us to present the IT portfolio in a different way and talk about what is a portfolio and what are we really investing in, and liken it to things like the stock market or liken it to things like your TSP. We're all choosing to invest in certain streams. And then we need to talk about performance. How are we looking and evaluating those performances so we make sure that we have more current information on how to do the decisions in our portfolio? So it's been great, but it's been very stressful. And the implementation is going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out. But we're excited to see what happens and what we need to do to improve.
And I know USDA was one of the first ones, I think, to get their baseline, common baseline approved.
We did.
And it's, I think, out there on the internet for everyone to read.
Yep.
So once that gets approved, this is where the hard work really begins.
It is and it is. It was a lot of hard work to get there, I'll tell you. It was a lot of detailed opportunities, a lot of late evenings. I know one plan I was working on until 2 a.m., and others have been staying up doing that. But, yeah, it's where the rubber meets the road, because then it's transparent, and then you're going to have the scorecarding and the focus, and that's going to be, you know, an interesting period to be in, I will tell you that.
All right, DevOps, Vitara, give us another sense of some other priorities.
Another one we're focusing on starting in 17 is whole genome sequencing. As an agency, it's a priority for us. It's actually in the budget for 17. But really working with our partners, CDC and others, to really make sure that as we're doing the trace forward and trace back of the organization, we're getting down to that specific level. So that's been really great for our folks to understand, because now they're wandering into the science side. So first you've got the compliance side, but they're learning more about the science side. So that's a big effort for us. There's storage. There's lots of expectations to move information and data around. There's lots of timeliness discussions. You want to make sure you have that information available in a timely manner. So we're spending actually a lot of time together with the business talking about how we can implement this successfully in the agency. And I think the last one is really, kind of going back to the portfolio, is modernizing our applications, trying to minimize to the extent possible our O&M spend, our operations and maintenance side, and looking at opportunities to consolidate, to have fewer applications, to have fewer mini tools that people are using, to make them more enterprise. I think those are some opportunities we're very excited about as far as the mission-focused ones.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll maybe talk in some more detail about some of those other priorities. My guest is Janet Stevens, Chief Information Officer of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Janet Stevens, the Chief Information Officer of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. Now, Janet, before break, we're going through a lot of your priorities, and you ended with minimizing O&M, operations and maintenance spending. Huge, huge priority across the government. OMB recently put out a draft memo that you probably have seen around O&M spending, and there's the IT modernization fund that the president requested for 2017, $3.1 billion. A lot of focus. How are you guys internally at FSIS really trying to say, how can we move money from O&M to DME?
We have a very robust now enterprise governance process, and there's three boards of that, and I chair one. And the great thing has been in the last couple years, and you had mentioned, I think we talked earlier about the communication side of, you kind of slowly little bits and pieces of what that means. So now they understand what a portfolio is and what investments are. So what we've worked on now the last 2 years is prioritizing our portfolio. Each of the executives get a vote for every single one of our investments. It's determined on three criteria. And then what we do is we talk about, okay, for the investments that are the lower priority, are there opportunities there to either sunset those? Are there opportunities to do something different with those? Are there opportunities to combine one or more of those with one of our existing applications? So it's been working really well. We've identified several that one will sunset. One, we're going to probably transition to another entity entirely because it's not something that's part of our mission anymore. And we've identified a couple others that will either entirely move into another application, so it'll go away as an investment, and that functionality will be moved into something else with newer enhancements. So we're really excited to be able to kind of thin the herd a bit. We're also looking at a lot of the tools. You see these tools that people use, like, oh, how do you track this? We always call it a fill-in-the-blank tracking system, right? And there's some tools out there that can track things, but they're not always enterprise. You know, what about the data? How are you sharing information? So we've taken a lot of opportunity the last couple of years to look at how are people doing their jobs, and we were finding things that were, even though they were using existing tools like an Excel or an Access, they really were opportunities to make them more enterprise and then share that data into our data warehouse. So those are a couple of efforts. One's currently working on now, and one we'll be doing coming up. But it's been really great, as the agency has seen, that we don't need to keep just dumping money into the, it's not sexy to say I need more money for Windows service. It's just not a good place to be. It's not fun to talk about, you know, upgrading your SQL data. I mean, no one really cares. But if you talk about, hey, we can not only give you something that you can use, we have other data that, did you know if you cross this data, would it give you other opportunities to see things differently, to do your analytics differently? And like, well, we didn't know we could ever do that. And that's really the opportunity opportunity for IT. We should be there showing them, hey, this is how you're doing it. Did you know that if you had all this other information available, would your job be better? Could you make better and more informed? Could it be more timely? And it's opened up a lot of discussions. And I think that's what's helped us. And so as we go through and prioritize, we also mark things that should be moved over, and then we fund them and prioritize them accordingly.
When you talk about your O&M spend, roughly, do you know your percentage offhand? Is that something you're still kind of looking at? Government-wide, I think it's 75% O&M, 25% DME. I know talking to some CIOs, they want to get it down to maybe 60, 65%. Do you have a sense?
I think we're in that 60 to 65% range at this time. So we've worked really hard to flip that metric over and then figuring out what should it be. Because you're going to have the, you know, every so many years, what do. So we're working with our enterprise architecture group now to look at that deeper dive. We have the high level roadmap. It's gone through, but we're going down and making it more granular, and that's giving us additional opportunities for how we can kind of smooth out some of those trends.
I was on a panel recently with one of your colleagues, Ray Coleman, at the National Resource Conservation Service, and he talked about how they were spending more on DME than they thought because a lot of DME is hidden in O&M. Did you guys, as you went down this path, find the same thing? That, hey, that could be labeled as DME. Hey, that could be labeled as DME because, in a sense, yes, it's kind of buried and it's in an old system, but that old system is being, quote, unquote, modernized.
Yeah, we spent time, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, discussing the hidden IT. But you had to—you couldn't just say it's hidden IT, it should be over here. You had to really talk about the business, you know, drivers for that. So we have significantly reduced all of that. So we know where our systems are. We know who manages them. We brought them all in to be managed centrally over time. But that took a lot of time, and it took a lot of trust, because if someone's had something for 8 or 10 years and suddenly the CIO comes in and says, you're going to give me your thing, I mean, they're not too happy about that because they think they're pretty happy right now. So I had to work, you know, really carefully to build a trust. But it did, as our portfolio started to be more transparent, as we started to break things out into the non-majors and the majors, that really gave the transparency that we're seeing now to be able to make the decisions that we're making.
And that ties us back to the FITAR conversation, because in many ways, that's what FITAR is trying to do from a grand scale. Seems like you guys maybe are a little bit ahead of the game, which is always good. A couple priorities you didn't mention, but I know every CIO is looking at it: cloud, mobility, big data. Let's just start with the cloud. Are you guys looking at the cloud? Have you already moved to the cloud based on your work with USDA headquarters?
So we were the first agency to move all of our infrastructure into the department's enterprise data centers, which, you know, is a cloud environment. We're working right now with the department on external cloud. I think we're there at the dev tests area, so that's going to be our first foray, is using it for dev test, and then working with the department. They have a team that's working in our CTOs on that as well, and we're working on what does that look like into pre-prod and prod. From mobility, like we mentioned earlier, some folks here work in a plant all day, but we have folks that are on the road and don't even have an office. So we have every flavor in between, from the Mississippi Delta to, you know, Vermont to you've got so many places where there's a challenge of connectivity. And so what we've been looking at is offering every flavor of connectivity that we can that will work in the environments that they're in, no matter the provider, no matter the service. We have had so many different pilots of different solutions, and we check in very frequently with our stakeholders to see what's working, what's not. So we're looking to see now, from a wireless perspective, there's a lot of opportunity on the wireless side. So we're trying to see what else we can do there. We did the giant satellites a while back, and now we're looking at the smaller satellites. But we also see these episodic challenges where maybe the Pope's visit came in, or you have a sporting event, and we do have folks that work in New York City, that work in Philly, and they're on, you know, those types of solutions, and it soaks the bandwidth. So we work very closely with our providers to make sure that, you know, we plan for that and we get more of a quality of service out of that to support the field. And definitely big data. I mean, that's always the topic, but we've had a data warehouse for a long time. We're in the transition phase right now, transitioning to a new enterprise data warehouse. And we're looking as an agency to use that to transform into advanced analytics over the next few years. So we have a lot of irons in the fire on that, but a lot of exciting opportunities ahead.
Let me go back to the mobility for a sec. One of the things about mobility, as you said, is connectivity, and you've had a lot of pilots. You can pilot yourself to death, it seems like, and never make a decision. Do most people in the field, are they using laptops? Are they using tablet computers? Are they depending on a smartphone? What is being used, generally speaking, and have you guys decided what works best from a bandwidth connectivity standpoint?
The tools we all have right now are laptops. So we're working now on our first pilot of tablets. So we did an initial pilot, learned some lessons, and we're going to be piloting a different device to see if that works a lot better. One of the earlier challenges with the pilots of mobile devices, of course, you were kind of married to one service provider, for lack of a better term. And there were some things in some of the guidance coming down of if you do X, you have to use this provider. If you use Y, you have to use this provider. So it really didn't work for us. And we would put in hundreds of individual waivers to be able to use different things. And it just drove us and the field quite crazy. So we've all moved past that now. So we're looking, we work very closely with our providers, very closely with the department, and very closely with the field on that. So we're definitely looking to start the pilot to move into tablets, and we hope to move off of laptops over the next few years. So that's going to be something we're heavily focused in right now.
So tell me, if you can, what kind of tablets, and do they meet the needs from a power, from a computing perspective, meaning do they have enough compute power to do the data entry, the data processing, coming back to the main data warehouse, the pull and push data? Do they meet your needs from those part? Or are you looking at, maybe something like a Microsoft Surface that is laptop/tablet versus an iPad, which is mostly tablet?
We've piloted iPads, and we're looking at next piloting some of the Microsoft tablets as well. We're less on, because we're not client server based anymore. The transition to everything computing basically in the cloud or on outside of the desktop side, it took a little pressure off of that. But measuring how much information is going back and forth in our applications to make sure that's not the problem. Our challenge really is working in the environments we're in is how ruggedized is it before it becomes too heavy, right? So there's environmentals, there's blood, there's liquid, there's heat, there's cold, they're in freezers, they're in places where literally there's a ring of fire that sometimes these things go through. So every environment possible you can imagine, and the floors are concrete. As you walk between one zone of a plant to another, there can be foam that shoots out from the sides of the doorway. So really, we've frozen them. I took one home. I dropped it. I've frozen them. I poured water into the keyboard and done all those wonderful things. And we converted from, so that's been fun. So it really is a lot of errors. But you can get too ruggedized. We don't need mil-spec. I don't need folks with this, that a tank can run over it. Not quite where we are yet. So somewhere in the semi-ruggedized is where we've been looking. And is it the device that needs to be semi-ruggedized? Do you provide the cover for that? But then when people take it out, a little worry there. We just converted from BlackBerries to smartphones this year. So we've got the Android and the Apples out there. I will say there is a large contingent still of I miss my BlackBerry, and we're learning to adapt to the change. But I think as they see that the apps now that they can get and some of the other opportunities that they bring, they've been pretty excited about that. But we actually surveyed them. What are your needs for smartphones? So that we can make sure we selected what they needed.
And when you talk about smartphones, I got to ask, BYOD, is that on the horizon or something that's being discussed yet?
We're mostly waiting to see. There's policy at the department we're waiting on. But I think when folks really start to discuss BYOD and you discuss the additional security, if folks need to be compensated in some way, the fact that the plans you get at a government level are going to be a lot cheaper than the plans that folks are going to get there. Nobody wants, and I can tell you from the telecom volumes that we have to look at everybody's telecom bill and tell you how much I'm going to give each individual person, or should it be a stipend? It really is a difficult call to make. It sounds great until I can wipe your phone. If you've got your phone and I have the ability to do something to it because we found something that it shouldn't do, folks don't want to lose their music or their photos or some of the other things that they have. So I think it's still a discussion, and it's not off the table. It just really is an evolving discussion at this point.
And talking about wiping the phones, that's a cybersecurity discussion. We're going to get there in a second, I know, as well. But before I do that, you talked also about big data. You're talking about you have a data warehouse, you're migrating it to maybe to a newer one, and then adding some analytics. Are we talking about a potential contract coming there, or is there already one on the street? Or what's your plans around the data warehouse and data analytics?
The current one we have was built, I want to say 2005. So it was done before we had a lot of the applications, or even planned a lot of the applications that we have now. So we spent a lot of time understanding and working with the business. We have an office here of data analysis and food protection, and a lot of the analytics are worked through that group. And so we've spent a lot of time with all the program areas, but a lot of time with this group to make sure we understood what the needs are. One big challenge is you can't look at, here's the way data is now. What about video? What about audio? What about all of these other things? Because wearables, the Internet of Things, all those things. So every time you look at it, you've got this new whack-a-mole that pops up and go, what about IoT? So we spent a lot of time trying to understand what the needs were and then breaking apart into phases. So we will be looking for assistance in that. So we'll have in-house support, but we'll also have contracted support to get us to that next enterprise data warehouse, and we'll be doing it, of course, in phases, so we don't break anything along the way, and we'll run concurrent for a while. But it's an exciting thing to see, because now we're talking about social media data. I mean, it's been a great discussion, so we didn't just build for the now, we're building for the future.
Sounds like you have your first Agile project maybe right there, data warehouse. Let's take a quick break, and we come back, we can jump into cybersecurity, some other things that you guys are working on, including social media. My guest is Janet Stevens, the CIO of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Federalnewsradio.com. It's the only place to read Mike Causey. Get the latest news on your federal pay, benefits, and retirement at federalnewsradio.com. Search Causey.
A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in every Monday at 10:05 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee. For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your career retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, sponsored by WEPA, Mondays at 10:05 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. for topics and ideas that could change your future. For free information, visit NITPINC.com and WAEPA.org.
Here's Bruce Downs, Deputy Chief Information Officer, Department of Interior, on the Federal Executive Forum on Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
We have to serve our customers where they are and their mission where they are, and they're there for a reason. They're out there because that's where the land is, that's where the public is, and we have to engage with them and enable them to have the data, collect the data, and use the data to help us all make better decisions.
To listen to the whole program from Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Executive Forum.
Technology that enables cars to drive themselves. Routine manned missions to Mars. Lockheed Martin innovations like these are changing ideas of what technology can do. So imagine what the people behind them are doing in IT. Lockheed Martin helps agencies put information to work, engaging employees, identifying threats, and improving service to citizens and soldiers. To see how we're using IT to engineer a better tomorrow, visit us at LockheedMartin.com/IT.
If you've ever worked for a large company that provides services to a customer, at some point you may have said,
huh, I think I might be able to do this better on my own.
Well, this is the show for people who actually take the step off the ledge and fend for themselves in the cutthroat world that is government contracting. Hi, I'm Alan Scott of Columbia Technology Partners and host Ready to Prime. Part information, part inspiration, all small business. The last Tuesday of every month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and on demand anytime at federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Janet Stevens, the Chief Information Officer of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. Now, Janet, for a break, we're talking a lot about your priorities. You talked a little cloud, a little mobility, a little big data. One priority that I know you have, as every CIO has, is cybersecurity. There's a lot going on around cybersecurity, specifically the implementation of things like the Einstein program from Homeland Security Department or continuous diagnostics and mitigation. So just talk a little bit about what you guys are doing at FSIS around cybersecurity and how those programs fit into your overall goals.
When I first got here, cybersecurity really was one of those areas I knew that I needed to really understand better because it was one of my biggest complaints, which usually means I don't understand it well enough. So we spent a lot of time making sure that all of our systems have ATOs. All of our systems are known. We've got the system boundaries correct. We're protecting them correctly. We're closing our POAMs, all those good things, which allowed us to move on into other areas, which is looking at how the agency does business. We do business internationally. We have folks that are not only domestic but are international and things like that. So we have to understand how, if someone needs to connect to something, how are we putting the proper, like, DMZs in place and things like that to make sure that we have them isolated and we let them only have access to what they need to. And then recently, really big for us, is the department is in the first wave of the CDM program. And so when we heard about that, we kind of put our hand up and said, hey, could we be one of the pilot agencies? So we are one of the two pilot agencies that will be moving forward on CDM. So this spring will be a busy time for us getting the tools in, getting them stood up, and getting them in kind of in line to start doing that initial data collection. Because we know, like we all know, you can only manage what you can see, and there's a lot of things that you may or not be seeing right now. We know that this, the technology that's being put in place, that we're going to learn a lot, and we're going to have to learn how to adapt to it. There may be some new policy we have to issue. We may have to do some things differently. What are going to be the network impacts when it goes from, you know, just kind of looking at it to actually having some sort of a trigger to do something? So we're going to expect to learn a lot. We're going to expect to learn a lot from our partner pilot agency, APHIS, and we're intending on sharing a lot along the way of the lessons learned. But we're really excited by that because we know that it's something that's going to come anyhow, but we really wanted to make sure that we as a team understood its impacts and its opportunities and just got our hands on the, you know, your technology people at some point at a heart where you want to get your hands on the tool, you want to see how it works, and eventually how this flows up into that dashboard.
Which tools, generally speaking, do you think you'll get installed first under CDM? I know they have a phase one, phase two, phase three, and there's a whole set of tools that they bought. But do you know, is there a specific set of tools that you're saying we need that one first, or we would like that one first?
It's basically being driven by DHS, but the Force Scout tools are the first ones that's being dropped in.
And then from there, do you expect this to last 6 months, 9 months until you start seeing some really data analysis that tells you the health of your networks?
So the pilot timeframes are really between USDA and DHS. So whatever they tell us the pilot dates are going to be, if they change and get shorter, if they get longer, we're going to flow with it. But we do expect to learn a lot. I think, frankly, as soon as they turn the devices up, we're going to start learning a lot. And then we'll need to evaluate, you know, not only our processes, but do we have the right tools to be able to analyze this information and make decisions on it? How do we want to integrate that into an improved dashboard? How do we want to integrate that into our security operations center? Things like that, or in our network operations center, for example. So we think we'll learn a lot pretty quickly, and then we're excited to see what the next steps are.
And as far as outside of CDM, there's the cyber sprint that OMB held over the summer. What kind of impact, generally speaking, does that have on FSIS as it relates to USDA more generally?
That was actually fun because I took the CyberStat slides and I made them kind of actually with people running. And so I'd go up to our executive, our management council, and talk about the cyber sprint. And then we talk about the transition to cyber marathon. But we took it a lot as an opportunity to educate people, because folks really didn't understand, you know, like the being able to use two-factor authentication and being able to make sure that you're blocking things, that you're doing the whitelist, blacklist, and, you know, what things we really need to do our job. So I think it was a great opportunity for education, but it was also a great opportunity for us to work with the business to understand how they worked, so that when there were things that we needed to go and explain or do differently, we could kind of put that together. But then everything else, you know, we need to do this to make things stronger. And everybody knows when you have a breach, that's when you know how good you are. So we don't want to get to that point. But so we learned a lot from others before us as well.
Cybersecurity, obviously a big priority for any CIO. Interesting enough for FSIS, though, another big one is around social media and communication tools. And one of the things that you guys seem to be doing is developing some mobile apps for citizens. We talk about mobility internally. Let's talk about the work you do to help support the use of social media and those mobile apps for citizens and other customers and businesses.
Yeah, that's one of my passions here. I love talking about our mobile apps. The first one we did was our meat and poultry inspection directory app. And we did that actually in-house. So what it does is it shows folks information on our meat, poultry, and egg products that are regulated. It's been downloaded about 10,000 times, and you can search by establishment, location, zip code, type of inspection, establishment name or number. So, for example, if you're in the grocery store and you pick up a package and you see the mark of inspection, there's an establishment number in there. And you wonder, if you look at it, you see a corporate address on the label that just says, in general, this company's headquartered in, you know, such and such, California. But where did that individual package come from? You can actually type that number in, and it'll tell you the establishment that it came from. And you can click, and there's lots of interactive things you can do to send things, to email that address to someone or plot it out. So that was the first thing that we did. And actually, our employees enjoyed it quite a bit, because it was downloaded 25,000 times a month from our website as these PDF files. Nothing wrong with PDF, but boy, if you're looking for something and you're just doing like Control F to sort through these pages, and we had it broken down. One document was only broken down by the number, and then the other document was only broken down by name. But then, is it an official name? Is it doing business as? So it really helped folks to both not only externally but internally be able to look things up. And we monitored the feedback on the Apple Store and the Android market, where folks were saying, hey, you know, giving us suggestions. So it wasn't only just, you know, a generic way. We actually could get enhancements that way. The next thing, and before that, the one we did was Ask Karen, and that's the 24/7 tips on preventing foodborne illness and safe food handling and storage and safe preparation. That's been downloaded over 100,000 times. That was kind of our signature app for a long time. And that was released actually in 2011. But you can actually even chat through the app with a live food safety expert Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So it's a more of an interactive app. And our big one that we released last year was FoodKeeper. And this was something that we partnered with Cornell University and the Food Marketing Institute. And it's a joint effort between USDA and EPA's Food Waste Challenge. And the goal of that was to reduce waste 50% nationally by 2030. So that has been downloaded only since last year. Now, keep in mind, Ask Karen, 100,000 since 2011. Just since last year, we're right at the 100,000 mark for FoodKeeper. So we've gotten such great feedback on that one. And what you can do is learn how to store things. How long can you store them? Is it a food quality issue versus a food safety issue? And that's very important. If you're going to throw something away because you think that there's a safety issue, maybe it's not a safety issue, maybe it's a quality issue. Maybe you can donate it to a food bank. Maybe you can freeze it. But really what it does is help folks learn, instead of just throwing it away, can I either keep it longer under different conditions? Can I donate it? But to keep the food waste down. So that's been phenomenal. Those apps have been things that we've just really enjoyed working
on. And generally speaking, have you been doing those in-house with in-house developers, with contractors, and does it come from your office or does it come from the mission side? But your office, for instance, as the CIO, is providing those tools, the APIs, the roadmap that they really need to follow to create an app.
So the MPI directory, we did completely in-house ourselves. And that was just to get our feet wet. What is it? How does an app work? How do we learn how to do this? How do we get it up on the Android market? How do we look on Apple? It's different ways to do things. So we got our feet wet internally with that. The Food Keeper was a partnership with industry and Cornell University. So that was something that we did not develop in-house ourselves. So that was our first really big partnership on having a vendor, but also partners that wasn't just us doing it, it was them. But all of that effort is overseen by my office.
All right, well, Janet, I know we can talk longer, but unfortunately we're out of time for today. My guest has been Janet Stevens, the CIO of the Agriculture Department's Food Safety Inspection Service. Janet, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.